Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, greetings.
All right. Back for another Q&A session of Brew Strong. We're trying to work through the backlog of questions that you guys have sent in to Brewstrong at thebrewingnetwork.com.
We appreciate everyone.
We do.
It gives us lots to think about, and you know, it's really gratifying to get so many questions. It means that there's a lot of people listening to the show, which is, you know, kind of surprising and gratifying at the same time.
Well, and even more surprising is that a quality engineering company like Blickman Engineering, Blickman with two N's, BlickmanEngineering.com, would be our sponsor.
That's right.
Yeah, decided to go with us and hitch their wagon, their fate to ours, which is, I would say, probably one of his least serious and intelligent moves. But hey, you know, we'll go with it. So make
Seems
sure,
speaker.
Yeah. No, John Blickman is just a great guy and quite the entertaining spirit if you get a chance to hang out with them. Go to BlickmanEngineering.com, again, Blickman with two N's, and send them an email and say, you know, check out all their products and nice products there on the website. They're always coming out with new stuff. As a matter of fact, if you're going to be at the convention in San Diego this June, you're going to want to check out the Blickman Engineering booth. They're probably going to have some new and interesting innovations. They're quite an innovative company. And, go up and shake John Blickman's hand and say, hey, thank you very much. If you enjoy this show and you want to keep seeing this show on the air and want to keep listening to this stuff for free, go up and check it out. And, you know, tell him how much you appreciate that he pays for the show so you don't have to. You know, that's all we ask of you. Mm-hmm. Just apply some thanks if you feel it's worth it.
Yeah, he'd be very gratified if you'd pick up his hop rocket, you know, turn it in your hands a few times.
And yeah. And the weird thing is, I don't think he really, like, expects anybody to buy anything. I think he's kind of just giving back to the community. But
he likes sharing. I mean, he likes, you know, sharing the ideas, you know, that make brewing fun, you know, building this equipment and, you know, trying to solve a problem, make the brew day a little easier. It's fun for him, and he gets a real charge out of it when customers appreciate the same issue and his solution to it. So
right. So just give him a thanks. You know, if you run into him, say thanks. You're at the conference, say thanks. If you're at neither of those, just send him an email and say thanks. You know. No further explanation needed. Just let them know that you appreciate it. And one thing, I've been doing these pilot batches for Heretic Brewing, or starting up this brewery. And one of the things is we're trying to do this guest brew with Matt Staley, a friend of mine from Southern California. And we're trying to have that beer ready for the Homebrewers Conference. And one of the problems I ran into is that he specified Amarillo hops. And this year, no Amarillo to be found. So I'm kind of like freaking out. I'm like, and one of the things, I've done these Pro-Am batches myself in the past. And it's always like, well, you know, I don't think we can provide that. Sorry. How about substituting this? How about substituting? There's always this whole raft of substitutions that they ask you to do. And so I told myself, I said, well, I'm not going to ask Matt to substitute anything. Whatever he needs, I'm going to make sure it's there. And then when he said he needed like Sriracha Ace and Amarillo, two hops that are like in zero supply. So I was kind of freaking out. But I contacted Nico Brew because he does a lot of hops. He advertised on the Brewing Network in the past. I was like, maybe he's got some. He worked hard to source us 44 pounds of Amarillo. It was a little bit pricey, but I couldn't get him anywhere. And he did me a solid and got me, the hops that I needed, and they were fresh, 2010 crop, I really appreciated that. It was really nice of them, NicoBrew.com, I thought that was pretty cool of them to help us out in the buying there when really, he's looking to, take care of you homebrewers out there, so pretty cool.
Another proud member of the BN.
Another proud member of the BN. Another BN mover. You betcha. Mm-hmm. All right. As I said, Q&A show. We're going to not screw around a lot. We're going to try and get through as many questions as possible in this next segment. So let's take a short break. And when we come back, we will dig right into your questions. Back after this.
When Blickman Engineering set out to design a great brewing stand, they knew it had to be strong, adaptable, and last for a lifetime. The top-tier brewing stand is now proudly available at BlickmanEngineering.com. It grows with your brewing skills and equipment. Start with 5-gallon coolers on its heavy-gauge stainless steel shelves. Then move all the way up to 30-gallon pots on the high-output burner tiers. Speaking of burners, the custom Blickman Engineering top-tier burners are extremely powerful, efficient, and amazingly quiet. They have safety stops to center your pot, and they'll last a lifetime and won't rust. The top-tier brewing stand allows virtually infinite combinations from traditional gravity systems to two tiers to completely horizontal. Configure your stand the way you want and have the freedom to change it at any time in the future. Your brewing stand should adapt with you, not force you to learn a new process. Visit BlickmanEngineering.com today to configure your top-tier brewing stand and to find a local Blickman retailer. You'll be surprised with all the flexible features and the competitive price. Start brewing with Blickman from the top tier.
Whether I'm making me dry stout or rebuilding me kegs, I head to the heart of dear Dublin for me homebrewing supplies.
You head all the way back to Emerald Isle just for a wee batch of grain or a bit of keg tubing?
No, you moronic waste of liver. Dublin, California. I go to HopTech.
For 30 years, HopTech in Dublin, California has been supplying homebrewers with malt extract, fresh grains, hops, spices and sugars, hop oils and extracts, and much more. HopTech is one of the first homebrew supply shops on the internet and is proud to offer award-winning beer kits, both online and in their store.
Mention the BN Army for a 10% discount off your order.
The store is open every day except Wednesday, or shop online at hoptech.com anytime. HopTech is run by passionate, award-winning brewers who live, love, and travel for beer and bring their experience to the store for you.
If you don't want to visit Dublin, just call toll-free 800-DRY-HOPS or go to hoptech.com.
Visit HopTech today in Dublin, California and at hoptech.com.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer at Brew Free or Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Okay, so my double IPA has an ABV of 7.5 and a clarity of brilliant. So that's a plus 8. I pour it.
Sorry, looks like she found it unpalatable.
Ha!
Shut up, Doug.
My creek gets a plus 10 versus girls because it's a fruit beer.
You can't open the bottle, and she walks over to the guy with the Pinot Grigio.
This sucks!
Ugh, I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
What's this? Non-Alcoholics Anonymous?
Dude, get out of here. We're in the middle of a brew session.
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Have you ever been called upon to explain why it's named India Pale Ale? Do you burp Y-Yeast 3522 and Crap Cascade? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the Tongue Splitter.
I've got Tri-Hop stuck in my braces.
And the Bourbon Barrel Porter.
Now on tap in the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Ewa, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
Pardon me. We're back.
Yes.
Live Q&A show here. One of the things about the Brewing Network is you can listen live while we do these shows. And you can even ask questions live during the show. So you go to thebrewingnetwork.com, check it out. There's a listen live button and a chat now button, and you can actually participate in the show. As a matter of fact, I think we have a question up for our live Q&A show coming out of the chat.
Yes, Phil Brazil's in the chat room today, and he wants to know, how can you measure modification of malt on a malt analysis sheet? I'll go through his sub-question. Is modification measured in percent? And how can you know how much farther you can convert or break sugar or protein? Let me think, Palmer.
Okay. Well, yeah, malt modification is on malt analysis sheets. It's known by a couple of descriptors. You may see it as the S to T ratio, or soluble to total protein. You may see it listed as just soluble protein. It's a percentage, and it's the soluble to total protein. In other words, what they do when malt is modified, when it's germinated, they gauge how much germination has occurred by measuring the soluble protein versus the total protein of the malt. And that gives that percentage, and it varies between 35% and 45% generally, is a measure of how much germination has occurred in the malt. And so the S to T ratio, or soluble protein, is or Kolbach index is another descriptor you'll see. It's all that ratio. And for single infusion mashing, you're generally looking for something that's 38% or 40% or better. 40% or better is typical for single infusion mash. If it's 38 to 40 or 38 to 42, that's a good ballpark for considering doing step mashing, and where you'd start out at a lower temp. Maybe a little bit of a protein rest, you know, 15 minutes worth, to do some more modification of that malt. And what modification means is it's allowing the proteases in the mash to break down the protein matrix to release the carbohydrates to the solution so that they can become soluble and acted on by the alpha and beta amylase enzymes to convert them from starches to sugars. That's what modification is all about. It's breaking down the protein carbohydrate matrix. Okay. You can tell it's the third show. Protein carbohydrate matrix to release the starches to the enzymes to convert those to sugars. Let's see. The sub question was, how do you know how much farther you need to break it down? Ooh, well,
yeah.
Generally, malts that you buy today, and especially in the U.S. And Europe, are very well modified. They're typically 40-42% modification, if not higher. Some, if you buy, you know, base malt from big maltsters, you know, that just crank it out for the big breweries. Big breweries don't want to have to fool with the long mash time because time is money. You know, the more grain they can mash, the more batches they can turn over in a day, the more money they can make. So they're looking for a very highly modified malt that takes a minimum of steeping time or mashing time to convert those sugars to starches. But the popular thought is that a highly modified malt seems to lack some of those intangibles, some of the little finer flavors that beer connoisseurs know and love. So other maltsters, independent maltsters like Roar and Breese and others, you know, they don't modify the malt quite as much. You'll see a value more of like 40 to 42 rather than 45. And those malts can be single infusion mashed. They can also be step infusion mashed, you know, short protein rest, beta amylase rest, alpha amylase rest, to get a little more characterful wort. You know, a little more, you know, put some more time into that. Lower modification, something like 35 to 38%, you can find from, you know, independent maltsters. Those less modified malts benefit from decoction mashing, where you take a stiff portion of the grist, about a third, and bring that very stiff mash to a boil in a separate pot, leaving the liquid behind, leaving most of your enzymes behind in the mash kettle. By boiling the grain, you help break up that matrix, solubilize those proteins that aren't as released from their matrix as a higher modified malt, and help get those starches accessible to the enzymes when you put that back in the main mash. That's what decoction mashing is all about. It was invented to help convert these less modified malts. So I guess that to go over those numbers again, it's the soluble to total protein ratio, otherwise known as the Kolbach index or soluble nitrogen ratio. And 35-38% is decoction mashing territory. 38-42% is step infusion mashing territory. 40% and above is single infusion mash territory. Not that one is really any better than another, but it depends on the beer you want to brew and your perceptions of how that beer is going to turn out as a result of your mashing process. You know, there's no factual answer because you talk to three different brewers and you get three different opinions on what's better.
Okay,
wouldn't you say, Jamil?
Yeah, I think so. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. You know, and the malts that you can get available today, unless you're buying in serious bulk and trying to buy the cheapest you can, you're not going to run into a problem. Most of the maltsters today are producing a really high-quality product.
Right.
All right. Let's see here. Justin asks, different Justin, making a brew in a bag and hop bags. So after listening to your archive show on Brew in a Bag – I'm going to, or should I say, bring a bag. I'm going to make my own bag for Bruna Bag, and I was wondering, can I also use the same sheer material to make a few other smaller bags for my hop additions? In the show, it was said that the regular nylon hop bags are too tight a weave for a Bruna Bag, but you could use the Bruna Bag material for hop sacks. Thanks for the help. You know, I think you could, but it is a looser weave, and if you're using pellet hops, you're going to get a little bit more leakage of the hops out of there. I think you'll get a little better utilization with the looser weave. Probably not much. I mean, it's a tiny difference probably.
Right.
But, I see no reason. Yeah, give it a shot. See how it works. If it leaks a little bit too much material, then you're going to need a tighter weave. But other than that, should work out just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Next one. John Fremont Brewer. He says, hey, guys, I found a recipe that calls for sparge hops and first wort hops. Can you lend opinions on this process? What would you say, John? First wort and sparge hopping.
Sparge hopping.
Mash hopping, I guess.
Mash hopping, sparge hopping. Yeah. I mean, when you do that, you're getting some aromatics. You're at 150 degrees, 170 degrees versus boiling. So you're not boiling off a lot of your aromatics like you do, with even late hop additions in the boil. But on the other hand, a lot of those oils and so on that you're extracting from the hops are sticking to the grain. I mean, they're going to get caught up and absorbed onto the incredible surface area of the grain. I think you're going to get very little utilization or use out of mash hopping. I mean, a lot of guys talk about it and have done it. I've done it myself, but I've never done a side-by-side batch to say, okay, A versus B, what's the real difference? It's something I just played around with. First wort hopping, again, you are putting hops into cooler temperature, 170, wort versus boiling. Theory or speculation is that in doing so, you're binding some of the hop oils and aromatics to wort compounds that are helping to carry some of that flavor or different flavors into the boil and survive the boil into the fermenter. Don't know. Jamil, you have some opinions on first wort hopping.
Oh, yeah, I do.
So I think you get some utilization in terms of isoalpha. I'm not real sure what aromatics really come through. I think in terms of if you look at the pro brewer side of things, if they want nice hop aroma and flavor, they're doing late hop additions.
Right.
And the later the better, in the whirlpool where just before that wort enters the piping to go into the fermenter. I mean, it's, as late as they can get it is where they're adding them to retain as much of those aromatics as possible.
Well, and there's some who are doing like first wort hopping, but I think they're doing it more for, the idea of it than anything else. Because all the side-by-sides I've done, first wort hopping gives you a little bit more bitterness than, something else. And people are like, oh, well, it's like a 20-minute bitterness because, it's such a mellow, different bitterness. And that's just a load of crap. I'm sorry.
Your good friend writes that down, yeah.
Oh, really?
I wrote that down, but I was quoting someone else.
You're quoting somebody else, yeah. Well, that's the theory, but until that's one of the things is I have the utmost respect for everything you've done, John. But myself as well. I believed something, or I was repeating something that somebody else had said earlier on, and then I did more testing, and I'm like, wait. this isn't true. Wait, you know, this is just that same stuff, you know. And I just, you know, I just don't believe it. You know, I've tasted these things. I've done blind tests. I've had other people brew them. I've had Denny brew them and send me blind bottles. Yeah. You know, and I taste them. I go, well, this one's a little more bitter. You know, this one's, you know, less bitter. You know, they both have about the same, you know, the hop character. Sure enough, the one with, you know, more bitter is the first wort hop, and actually the other one had, you know, with just a regular 60-minute edition, had more hop character. It's like, well, you know, there you go. There's your first wort hopping is just you're getting a little bit more, you know, boil time out of those hops. And
yeah,
there's nothing magical happening there. I think it's based off of, you know, one thing that was said earlier on, and you know, that whole thing about Germans saying, well, you know, it's a finer hop quality, you know, with the first wort hopping. Well, that finer hop quality is, you know, boiling off all the hop flavor possible. Because, you know, if you were to give, you know, a German something dry hopped, I think they would freak out. And, you know, those classic German brewers, they'd be like, oh, my God, you know, this is horrible. Yeah. It's like cat piss. Well, that's the way we like it in America. Lots of hop flavor. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's,
it's a lot of speculation.
Right.
And subjective rather than object. But, you know, but that's our opinion at this point because other people swear by it. So.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things is if you're a home brewer and you like to do it that way and you feel it makes a difference for your beer and you're all geeked out. It's the same thing with like decoction. You feel like decoction makes a huge difference for your beer and it's the traditional way things were done. Go for it. Don't listen to us or don't listen to me, you know, just, it really doesn't matter. If your beer turns out better that way, you should do it that way. In home brewing, the cost is insignificant compared to, you know, your time investment and all that. Just go for it. Do whatever process makes your beer better and you feel is better. Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that it makes a better beer for you if that's what you like to do. So no hesitation there. All right. I wonder if we can squeak in one more before we take another break.
Sure.
Oh, my God. Eric. Eric says, hey, I've been homebrewing for a year now. I started in New York City, but I'm in Poland now. He's going to college. Yeah. I just brewed my first batch over here, an oatmeal stout. I've been trying various European beers. I came across Rodenbach Grand Cru a couple of weeks ago, and I love it. I'm thinking about making something similar to this. Can you guys help me understand this beer style better? Perhaps list a couple of sources that I should look into that would enable me to brew something like this. Thanks a lot. Well, Eric, clearly you don't listen to all the shows that we have on the Brewing Network. Because if you did, you would know about a show, The Jamel Show. And just look for that. Go back into the archives on the Brewing Network. You go to thebrewingnetwork.com. There is archives of all the shows free to download, and you're going to find one for Flanders Red on there. I don't think we did Flanders Red and Brown. We did just Flanders Red. So Rodenbach Grand Cru Flanders Red. Check that out. You can download it for free. Along with, you know, all the BJCP styles. We did shows on those, and you go check those out. A lot of great information there. Tell you exactly how to brew a beer like that. And if you're looking for a printed recipe, you can pick up a copy of Brewing Classic Styles. John and I co-authored that book, and you can get them at thebrewingnetwork.com/store. Go to thebrewingnetwork.com and click on the store link there, and that'll take you in there. And usually you can find autographed copies of Brewing Classic Styles and How to Brew and a bunch of other great books in there for a reasonable price. So check that out, and that'll help you out with the Flanders Red. All right, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get into more of your questions after this. Hi, I'm Jamel Zainasheff, and in addition to my work on the Brewing Network, I write the style profile column in every issue of Brew Your Own magazine.
Hi, I'm Sean Paxton, and when I'm not prepping for the Home Brewed Chef on the Brewing Network, you can find me writing articles on how to cook with your home brew for Brew Your Own magazine.
Greetings, cretins. This is John Palmer, and when I'm not writing for Brew Your Own, I'm reading it.
John Palmer, Sean Paxton, Jamil Zainasheff. If you love listening to them on the Brewing Network, you'll love reading their articles, tips, and recipes in the pages of Brew Your Own magazine. Join Jamil, John, and Sean 8 times a year in Brew Your Own. And when you subscribe to BYO on the Brewing Network website, half of your subscription price goes right back to the BN to support great beer and food programming. So sign up for Brew Your Own magazine through the BN website today so you can listen and read your way to better homebrew.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for every beer style. I want a Cicerone.
The Cicerone Certification Program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are 3 levels in the Cicerone Program: Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, and Master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerone are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
Since 1921, Munton's has been a provider of quality malted grain and extract.
What did he just say?
That's 90 years of locally sourced grain for home brewers and professional brewers alike. All farmed within 50 miles of our malt houses.
What? I can't understand what this guy says.
Last part. I don't
know. Whole and crushed malts, including wheat and peated malt, liquid extract, hopped and unhopped, as well as dried malt extract. Everything from beginner home brewer kits to all the ingredients an advanced home brewer needs.
Something about trains?
What
language is this guy speaking? He's from Austria.
Munden's is proudly serving brewers in 54 countries and honored to be a leader in malting!
Can you understand this guy?
No.
That's a really weird language.
Ask for Munden's malt and malt extract at your local home brew shop!
Munden's, for brewing, distilling, and baking. Quality malted grain and extract for 90 years. Make your malt Munden's.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BN Army in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, don't be whiny. Don't be a whiny guy. Go get yourself over to AdamEve.com and get yourself a 50% discount off just about any of the 18,000 items that they provide. You'll also get yourself 3 free adult DVDs and an extra
stainless steel zipper brush.
An extra essential gift. and they're going to do free shipping on this. So you go to AdamEve.com, and if you type in Jamil, J-A-M-I-L, for the offer code on checkout, they're going to send you the free three DVDs, a free extra gift, and you're going to get free shipping on the whole thing, not to mention the 50% off of just about any of the 18,000 items that that they offer. So offer code JAMIL at AdamandEve.com. Check it out. Good people, and they are providing some good stuff there.
18,000?
18,000 items. You wouldn't think there's like 18,000 of those kinds of items, but apparently
I can only think of a few hundred myself. But.
Google it. I'm sure you could find more.
I'll learn something. There we go.
Something more for Palmer to learn. All right. So V-Guard writes in, weird sweet infection, ? Hi, I greatly enjoy the show and have all the books by the hosts. Job well done. I recently bottled an APA and encountered something strange in one of the bottles. The aroma as I opened the bottle after 2 days of bottle carbonation was clearly vinegar. The taste was pretty sweet, much sweeter than at bottling. The bottle was already carbonated after just 2 days. All the other bottles are fine and taste great. Seems like something has made the beer sweeter, vinegary, and fully carbonated in just 2 days. Is there any wild yeast or infection that causes these results? The beer was fermented for 14 days at 19 degrees C with Y yeast, American Ale 1. It may have suffered a slight drop in temperature after about 4 days, but has no apparent diacetyl. Regards, Viard. I can tell you right off, I'm pretty sure this is a pediococcus infection. That would be my guess, and I would say, well, while you're saying there's no diacetyl, if you're saying it's sweet and vinegary, then I got to go with pedio.
Okay, where's the sweetness aspect coming from? Is it, because the pedio is not creating sugar. So.
No, but it creates a lot of diacetyl, and a lot of people equate diacetyl with sweetness.
Okay, yeah.
So that would be my guess,
mm-hmm.
Especially since he also mentions vinegar.
Yeah, that's right.
But pedio would generally, create lactic acid.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, a lot of people do not know the difference between lactic and acetic character.
True. Yeah. It could be a combination.
It takes experience as well. Yeah, it could be a combination of things. But I would have to go, since the other bottles were fine, I would have to go PDO on this one.
Yeah.
That would just be my guess without tasting it. But I like his description. Mm-hmm. His description made it actually pretty easy. A lot of times people go, well, there's something different about this beer. What do you think it is? I don't know.
Yeah.
Without tasting it, I don't know how different the beer is. But he gave a good description, and that would be my take on this one. All right. Let's see here. I'm going to flip through here. Okay, here's one. Here's one specifically for John.
Oh, all right.
Marco from Colorado says, "Hey, John, my name is Marco, and I'm an intermediate level brewer from Colorado. I've been doing more all grain brews lately, and I've noticed that I don't have any cold break in the boil kettle after chilling and whirlpooling and racking to the fermenter." Might be the whirlpooling breaking up the cold break. I do get cold break in the fermenter. Oh, well, after about 6 to 12 hours before I see any active fermentation. I've been trying to research this, and it seems that some trub in the fermenter is beneficial for fermentation, but many articles say separate it out ASAP. I've looked at many forums, and many people experience the same issue as me and have no ill effects. I think you would say separate it out, but keeping a little in the fermenter is good. And my impression is as kind of a gray area for home brewers. Am I worrying too much? I was thinking of allowing the cold break to settle out and rack off that to the fermenter. I think I heard or read or heard on that on a podcast. Maybe I should do that for lagers. Trying to standardize my procedures. I'm hoping that you can shed some light on this issue. Currently have a couple brews in fermentation, a northern alt that I racked off the troop to secondary after only a week, and a pale ale at 2 weeks of primary. I'm planning on letting the APA go for another week or so and rack into a keg. I reckon I'll eventually figure things out as time goes on, but I wanted to reach out to you for help in order to expedite things. Thanks for all you've done in the past and what you continue to do, trying to brew strong. Marco. I met Marco, I believe, in Colorado at a homebrew meeting. Nice guy.
Oh.
I think he works as a chef in like a corporate thing. Nice guy.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, the popular thought on this topic has changed over the years. Yeah, originally it was, you know, get the beer off of all the trub and rack off of it. But then there's several articles 3-4 years ago where they evaluated fermentation vigor, days to a bright beer. Green beer character, you know, fermenting after on a filtered wort versus fermenting on a wort that had X amount of cold break put back in. And they found that beers that fermented on cold break had a more vigorous fermentation and finished sooner. In other words, cold break contains a lot of nutrients that yeast can use and will improve the vigor of fermentation and very often finish that fermentation sooner. The downside to fermenting on the troop like that is you increase your potential for haze. Depending on other factors such as your calcium levels and so on, that may or may not be an issue. I think in general, my recommendation to brewers is to not worry about getting the beer off the troop. Assuming you have a good, healthy fermentation, that you don't let the beer sit on the troop, you know, in the primary fermenter for months on end after fermentation. That you bottle it and or keg it, you know, get off the troop. I wouldn't worry about trying to rack off the cold break before fermentation.
Well, and you know, I think one of the key things that you're saying was comparing chilled filtered wort to wort with the troop added back in, the break material added back in. No home brewer is chilling their wort down to 32 degrees and filtering it before, you know, fermenting it. And the reality is that there's more than enough of these compounds that aid fermentation in the wort if you're not chilling it and filtering it. That's my take on it. So, you don't need to have piles of visible break material in the bottom of the fermenter, which is what people are claiming. That's what bugs me. Is you're stating it right, John? It's like, well, the difference between a filtered wort and that with the troop. Nobody else is talking about that. They're going, the break material is beneficial. It's like, well, there's far more than you need as far as yeast health goes in unfiltered wort. You know, even if you get rid of all that you can see in the kettle and have zero transfer over to your fermenter, there's There's more than enough there. Now, one thing that the actual clumps of brake material may provide is nucleation sites for CO2, which evolves more CO2 that way. And
right.
Maybe with less CO2 saturation, you're getting slightly better fermentation performance from the yeast, and you're going to get a slightly better attenuation, but the flavor is going to change because you've got less CO2 pressure in there, which tends to hold down like esterification, things like that. So, or ester production. So, I'm not sure that that's necessarily a value. One of the questions that Marco has was, he's like, oh, I'm whirlpooling and I don't see any brake material in the kettle, and then I see it in my fermenter 6 to 12 hours later. I think, I'm guessing here, one of the steps you're missing, Marco, is after you whirlpool and you've chilled it down with like a whirlpool chiller or whatever it might be, that tends to break up the brake material into smaller particles. You need to let that wort sit without whirlpooling for another 20 to 30 minutes and let all that kind of settle out to the bottom, and then transfer to your fermenter. And
yeah.
You should see clear wort go into the fermenter and leave behind all the brake material. If you whirlpool, shut off the whirlpool, and then start transferring, you're going to, all that brake material is bust up into little parts and is in suspension. You're going to get it all into your fermenter. Like John's saying, on ales, yeah, it's not that big a deal. The flavor difference between brake material in the ales versus the lagers. I mean, in a clean lager, a clean ale, maybe I would worry more about the brake material. One of the things that you need to keep in mind is, we talked on one of the earlier shows about hop utilization, bittering, and things like that. You know, carrying over more brake material, that might actually affect the yeast, it might affect bittering, it can affect a lot of other flavor compounds. So whatever you do, just keep in mind what you're doing and try and be consistent. And if you're making other changes, be aware that the brake material that you carry over could have some effect on the flavor as well. And it also affects, if you want to repitch the yeast, if you don't repitch, it's not a big deal. But if you're repitching yeast and you allow a lot of brake material to carry over to your fermenter, you're going to end up with a slurry that is, when you harvest that, that's full of brake material. And you have far less yeast in there. And, if you go and repitch that, you're pitching a whole bunch of brake material into your next beer. So it's just not a great thing. So in general, I say leave the brake material behind in the kettle if you can. Everything else works out a little bit better, I think, if you can. If you can't, not a big deal. Yeah. Not the end of the
world. All things in moderation.
Exactly. But that's kind of, I think one of the things to keep in mind. All right, one more question, then we'll take another short break. Thermowell. Murray's, Brian and Cincy, he says, Jamel finally made the plunge into temp control with an upright freezer. I'm trying to decide if a thermowell is the right way to go. It seems perfect. You get the internal temperature of the beer, not the ambient temperature, but there seems to be some debate whether it's really better than just taping the probe to the outside of the carboy. What do you think? I think a thermal well in the center of the beer, that's great. Absolutely works. I think that works great. But I don't do one because I tape mine to the outside of the fermenter and I cover it with insulation. I think the important part is covering it with insulation. If you cover with insulation, bubble wrap or, a folded up t-shirt or whatever it might be, something to provide it some coverage so it's reading the beer temperature versus the ambient temperature, I think that helps. The problem I have with thermowell is, cost, and also it's another item that you're sticking in there that you have to sanitize, and if it's not perfectly sanitized, then you're, adding a little more contamination to your beer. I don't know. What, you know, if you bought one, I would go ahead and just make sure you sanitize it well, and I think that's a great item. Mm-hmm. If you're cheap or can't sanitize it well, then just stick to sticking on the outside and put lots of insulation on the outside. What do you say, John?
Yeah, I mean, it's taping the outside works. You know, as you say, I have done that. I'll stick it under a piece of cardboard, you know, mm-hmm. ripped off a box, and you know, that works fine. Thermowell is a nice, elegant way of doing it. That way, you know, you've got the actual beer temperature, not the carboy temperature, necessarily. It's a little bit better. I think, you know, I'm like you, it's like, hey, this works. Done. But,
I'm cheap and lazy.
Mm-hmm.
So just sticking on the outside is.
Yeah. As much as we love gadgets, we are still cheap and lazy at heart.
Well, I was wondering what Blickman would do. I could see him going either way. I could see him saying, well, you know, the straight solution is to stick something into the beer and measure that temperature. But I could also see him saying, well, the simplest solution is just to insulate your probe on the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Knowing him, he'll probably come up with a Bluetooth, you know.
Yeah, he'd come up with something totally different.
Yeah.
Something we haven't even thought of he would come up with.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up with a couple more questions back after this.
When you hear Blickman Engineering, think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman Gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brewpub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brewpub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tailwagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub, where you'll feel at home.
I've always thought that opening a brewery was a great way to ruin what is the perfect hobby. But like most homebrewers, I really wanted to see what it would be like to produce my own beer commercially. when I started out, I was, you know, obscure homebrew geek, and being part of the Brewing Network has exposed me to a lot of people with a great passion for brewing. They seem so supportive, interested, and generous with their support. That kind of thing makes you feel like you can succeed at anything. Of course I'm excited. It's frightening. It's terrifying. It's kind of, we've got this rescue dog, and she is completely frightened. So when she comes up to me, she's shaking and salivating at the same time. I feel the same way with Heretic. I'm still a homebrewer at heart, and I hope that homebrewers always feel welcome at Heretic and able to provide part of the feedback and creativity that makes craft brewing great. The thing that excites me most is the opportunity to put a beer out there that I feel is the best beer I can make, and especially get a chance to go and drink that beer with people and see their reactions and get their feedback, and hopefully they'll be as excited as I am about Heretic beer.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're doing live Q&A here in the lovely studios in Pacheco. And Jeremy from Stanford, California. Where is that? That's not like Stanford University. That's Stanford, California Department. Department of Geophysics.
Ah.
Stanford University. All right, we better take this one serious. So we're up. Quick. Come on, Palmer.
Okay.
Give yourself a couple of slaps. Jeremy says, hello, J&J. You decide the order.
Which one should we do first?
You're first. Okay. I have been brewing for about a year now. Most of my batches have turned out good. Have they turned out good? Yes. But I feel like what I am really missing is temperature control. Absolutely. On the other hand, I also still chill my wort using the water bath method. I typically do 2.5 to 3-gallon batches, so I'm doing full boils at this lower volume. Right now, I only have the cash to cover one of these projects. From what I've learned from the show, I think you would suggest going with the temperature control, since my understanding is a lot can be made up with proper fermentation, and in general, lots of brewers seem to get all the gadgets for the hot side of things at the cost of the cold side. Am I looking at my situation rightly? Thanks, Jeremy. Well, yeah, like most Stanford University postdoctoral scholars, you know what you're quite intelligent, and you read that correctly. I tell you, I would love for my kids to go to Stanford. I would go with fermentation temperature control. Wort chiller is nice, but temperature control fermentation. Again, you know, I've been making these kit beers where it's a can of extract pre-hopped. You're doing nothing but adding water, and if you ferment it right, it tastes great. So, again. Being able to ferment correctly is really cool.
Yeah. That's 70%.
Yeah. Well, my daughter got a you know, one of these Stanford summer school things, which I don't think that I'm sure they sent out a bunch, but I don't think they sent it out to every student. Just the ones who get straight A's in their junior year, doing all AP classes. You know.
Yeah.
I hate it when parents go all gaga over the kids, but I tell you, that does it for me. So I would love it if she went to Stanford. That would just be a big thing for me. So yeah, Jeremy, if you can get my child into Stanford, then yeah, I'll help you out with whatever beer you need. Next one. Let's see here. Let's knock out one more, and then we'll get to our live chat. Sterilizing mayo jars in microwave for yeast washing. This is all you, Palmer. Pablo says, I know Palmer sterilizes his mayo jars in the microwave. How much water do you use? How long do you run? And should the lid be on tight or not?
Well,
it depends if it's metal or not. I would appreciate the advice. And never should be tight, I guess. The podcast I listened to you did not have the details. Thanks, guys. I always listen to your podcast, sometimes three or four times. Pablo.
Okay. Well, yeah, what I do is I use the glass mayonnaise jars, not the plastic ones that seem to be out these days.
Uh-huh.
Because those, when you heat those up with boiling water, they tend to form all over the place. I put in, I don't know, half cup, you know, like a half an inch of water in the bottom. And, no more than that. And microwave it for 5 minutes. That water boils. And I'll put saran wrap over the top, and then the lid's not really being sanitized or sterilized during that, but I just put another piece of saran wrap over the top for yeast propagation. I don't screw the lid on tight. You certainly wouldn't want the lid on tight while you're boiling water inside the jar, because it just bursts all over the place.
Or a metal lid.
Yeah, metal lid with arc too.
Mm-hmm.
Although was it MythBusters?
Set your microwave on fire.
Yeah,
depends how much metal.
Yeah,
you put a piece of foil in there; it's not so bad.
Yeah, but yeah, I just use saran wrap. And half an inch of water, less, about 4 or 5 minutes, and let it boil, and that sanitizes the inside of that jar very well.
Well, I think what you're saying there is, very important. You're saying sanitizes, and he's saying sterilize. And the thing is, in a microwave, you're never going to sterilize that mayo jar. So, I think for all intents and purposes, it's as good as sterilizing for what you're doing.
Yeah.
The chance of some spore being on there that is, dry and not affected by the microwave. So microwaves, depend on exciting those, water molecules and heating up whatever is in there. And that's how it heats it up and kills it. And if there's something dry there, it's really not going to do a whole lot to it. So it's never, you're not really sterilizing that. For that, you need steam at a certain pressure, or, dry heat at a certain temperature and time. Then you're truly sterile. But I think this works fine. Just keep in mind, I think people should be careful about using the word sterile versus, sanitized and things like that. If you want to sterilize it, get yourself a pressure cooker, and you can actually make something sterile or to that effect. And then, in the microwave, just be real careful. If you're heating up liquid in the microwave, especially if you fill up like a jar all the way with liquid, water, let's say you fill up a glass or something like that with water, and you fire up the microwave, if you get it to the point where it's almost boiling, you can kind of take it out and it's all right. If you have a microwave that doesn't rotate and you put it in this nice smooth glass and you heat the daylights out of it and you really pump a lot of power into it, when you pick that up, it can boil over.
Yeah.
And be almost explosive. So you need to be careful. You can actually injure yourself with something like that. So just something to keep in mind on the microwave. Microwave is not a toy. Mm-hmm. It's a tool.
That's right. That brings to mind an email I received today, Jamil.
About tools?
Well, no. A brewer asked about late extract additions. He said a lot of people in the forums get all worried about, if I don't pasteurize this extract enough, how long, how hot should it be when I add it? How long should I leave it before I chill? Because they're afraid of bad juju, in the extract, spoiling their batch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to kind of go in the same, sanitizing versus sterilization thing, but in this case, pasteurization, what you're looking for is temperatures above 140, like 150, 160 for 5 minutes, 10 minutes at the most, will pasteurize your malt extract. And that is, and pasteurization is, knocking down, I forget the exact percentage, but, it basically knocks, any bacteria, live bacteria, down to an insignificant level.
I thought it was longer than that for 140 to 150. I thought it was more like, 30 minutes or something like that. At 180 or 170, it's more like 5 minutes, I thought. Maybe wrong.
Yeah, Google it,
Yeah.
go ahead and Google it. I mean, I know I looked it up when we were working on Brewing Classic Styles and extract. And I may have a sentence or two in there. I just don't remember at the moment on that what that time and temperature guideline is. But it is fairly short. Mm-hmm. It's on the order of, I'm pretty sure 10 minutes at 160 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Not that hot, not that long, and you are pasteurized and you have very little to worry about in terms of contamination.
Well, the interesting thing when I was doing these experiments with canned kit beer, Chris White was telling me that they also tried out fermenting out various extracts. Just I think it was at the request of one of the customers, and he was saying that on all the liquid extracts, they didn't have any contamination whatsoever. That those were fine to go ahead and just mix with water, and you didn't have a contamination problem. But on the dry malt extracts, the spray malt extracts, they ended up with some contamination. And so their suggestion was you don't necessarily need to boil it or anything like that, but you add that dry malt extract to boiling water at that temperature, you pour that in, mix it up, and then that is more than enough sanitizing for the dry malt extract. Yeah, I think if you get something up into that temperature and almost instant at boiling temperature even at 140, 150, 160, I think if it's sitting there for half an hour, it's going to pretty much take care of it, huh?
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true.
All right. Justin, we got any questions from the chat?
Yes, quick question from Blue Carpet Sample in the chat room. I guess he just brewed a couple weeks ago your Berliner Weitz from Brewing Classic Styles, and he pitched a vial of White Labs WLP630. That's the Berliner Weitz Platinum strain. And he says he'd eventually like to add some cranberries. Says, I intend to cook the cranberries before adding to break them down.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if I should add them now as the beer is souring, or should I add them once the beer is done and is soured? And also, should I pitch an additional vial of lactobacillus to speed up the souring?
Well, if the reason to add it now is, whatever critters are active, they will help break down the cranberries much faster. If you wait until later, you're going to kind of know where it's at before you add the cranberries, but the activity of the yeast and bacteria is going to be much less. So, you know, between the two, I would add them now to ensure that a lot of those sugars are broken down, assuming you don't want, although there's not a lot of sugars in cranberries, you really want to kind of break them down. So I would add them now while things are still active. It never hurts to add more lactobacillus on a Berliner Weiss. Especially you get a pure culture, just go ahead and add it. It's not a big deal. You can add as much as you want. I don't think it really restricts lactobacillus. On some things like, Brettanomyces and, your general brewer's yeasts, the population has an impact on, the progression of things. I'm not sure on bacteria whether that's really true or not. John, do you know if that's true, whether the concentration of bacteria affects the progression of souring or anything like that?
I don't have any knowledge on that.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't think that's been studied. That's a good part to study. Hey, maybe our guy out in Stanford could study something like that.
Give Vinny on the show. Vinny might know.
Yeah, I don't know. I know he's commented on the concentration of Brettanomyces, but not necessarily on lactobacillus or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I would just go ahead and throw in more if it's not souring at the pace. Probably the bigger impact would be temperature. So if you're holding it at like 60, if you jack it up to 70, it's going to sour twice as fast.
Yeah.
So, if it's at 65, pump it up to 75 Fahrenheit and you'll get souring twice as fast.
Okay.
So, all right. I think that's it. Phew.
Another great show.
They're all great. They're of the highest quality, and that's why Blickman Engineering is sponsoring this. Another great way to support the Brewing Network and the incredible effort that we put forth drinking beer and talking about beer each week is to go to the Brewing Network store. Check it out. It's thebrewingnetwork.com/store. You can get great hoodies, shirts, glassware, hats. They probably even have, strap-ons or God knows what. 18,000 interesting products there at the Brewing Network store. Check it out. Signed books from Homeboy and Dogmeat, John Palmer and Jamal Zanishev. Lots of good stuff. And everything you buy goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network. Really helps support this kind of programming. So if you enjoy this, go buy yourself something. It's good stuff. Justin wouldn't carry it in the store if it wasn't good stuff, and he didn't really believe in it. So feel free to purchase whatever it is there. It's good stuff. And other than that, remember,
when I'm not wearing Brewing Network gear, I'm washing it.
You're washing it, and it leans a little to the left for those who wanted to know. Brew strong,
everybody.